Oh, hi, Joe. It's a very special episode of Tech and Theater Clubhouse Conversations. So welcome, everyone. This is a conversation around conversations about the conversations we have on the Clubhouse app. I'm Jess, CEO and co-founder of Broadway Unlocked.
And I'm excited. I'm also Joe, though, co-founder of Broadway Unlocked.
Gross.
What? I'm excited for this episode and talking to Justin. And this is Tech Theater, Clubhouse Conversations, a podcast to continue the conversation, because every week on Clubhouse, Tuesday at 12:55 Eastern, come on and join us, we have these amazing discussions with brilliant people who sit at the intersection of tech and theater.
Normally, we recap those conversations and continue where we left off, because that 1 hour is like never enough to express all our thoughts. But Clubhouse has also been a space that has connected us to extraordinary people working in the arts and small businesses around the world. So today, drumroll please, Joe used to be a drummer. There it is. We are very lucky to have one of our new Clubhouse friends join us on the podcast all the way from London, England. Justin Masterson is a theater producer and arts consultant and is now the senior project manager of a super exciting project in London called the New Diorama Theatre Broadgate.
NDT Broadgate is a rehearsal space and artist development complex in London. It's a project that we've been intrigued by ever since first hearing about it on Clubhouse from Justin Masterson. And now we are incredibly fortunate to actually have Justin with us to answer all of our burning questions.
The best thing about this entire year on Clubhouse and in digital shows has like absolutely been the people we meet and these theater projects that like come into our orbit. And so we are so inspired and excited to get to talk to Justin in depth about NDT Broadgate on the podcast today. We hope you enjoy. Justin Masterson,
oh, hi.
Welcome to the podcast.
thanks. It's great to be here. It's great.
We're so excited because this podcast is usually conversations around conversations about the conversations that we have on Clubhouse.
Sure.
And we've had conversations about NDT Broadgate and you with you so many times that it clearly warranted its own podcast episode.
Clearly.
Can I take us just like a slight sideways to start?
Yeah.
Because here's the thing, when you make friends on Clubhouse,
the
app, you don't know anything about them except for what we're talking about. So like, you are not British and you're in London.
I am not British and I'm in London.
And you are a theater maker. Can I indulge and just like ask for a little bit of your story?
Yeah, sure. So I, all the way back, I went to university went to college. There it is. Been here too long. went to college for theater. So I went to Carnegie Mellon. And then from there, I went to Los Angeles, was in film and TV for a bit because it was 2008. And it was really, really ridiculous in theater at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody was moving from their sort of like arts admin jobs. And so I was in Los Angeles for about 4 years. Left Los Angeles, went to New York, went back to Los Angeles, sort of did a bit of back and forth, worked at agencies in New York and Los Angeles for a bit. And then I started company managing at the Wallace in Los Angeles. I company managed for like a year, and then I switched onto the artistic team. I was like in the team, and then the director of programming, she sort of like, right, you're going to cross over both now. So you're going to program and produce now, which is what I always wanted to do. And so I was producing and programming for them for 4 years. And I ended up doing a lot of work with Nihai and Complicité and Matthew Bourne, because we were touring all these international companies. And then we did the revival of Spring Awakening. That was with Deaf West.
Right.
And we did a bunch of like, we were doing like one-offs with like Patti LuPone and like Jeff Goldblum, and like it was ridiculous. And then right about, we did our second show with Nihai, and I had an idea that I put to the artistic director right when I started, and I like shelved it for a minute, and then I brought it back when Paul Cruz, who executive produced Nihai for a really long time and in Brief Encounter, which was at Studio 54, he became the artistic director. And I just like threw this idea out because my boss was like, now's the time. Like, you should tell him, he'll do it. And I had this idea to do a Joe's Pub in Los Angeles. And so I started the sorting room at the Wallace. Because I knew that LA needed that space and they had Rockwell. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I remember living in Los Angeles being like, there was nothing central that like you, if you were going to go and you were going to see like For the Record or any of those mm-hmm. guys, you were going out to Silver Lake.
Where there's no parking.
Right.
No parking by Rockwell.
Yeah, exactly. And I sort of knew that I was like Beverly Hills doesn't really have the space for like independent and upcoming artists. And if you want a stage that feels very underrepresented, it was a stage in Beverly Hills. And like, we all knew this. We were all like fighting this uphill battle of like having the space be sort of having the Wallace be representative of Los Angeles as a whole, so mm-hmm. that the theater was looking like the city was actually in. Mm-hmm. And so what we did was we programmed this, it was, I think it was like 6 weeks, 32 shows over 6 weeks. And we did just like Joe's Pub. I like worked with agents in New York. Cause I had always, Patrick Harold, who's like the head of theater at ICM, and Joyce Kate, who famously reps Tony Kushner. But I had worked with both of them. And I was like, what would you do? How would you do the space? What seems reasonable? And they basically, built all these ideas with them and with people who I knew were going to be booking artists anyway. And so we tried to make it as sort of like equal as we could be coming to the table with stuff. So we did these 6 weeks. We programmed Megan Hilty and Jeff Goldblum and Rita Wilson and like,
oh my God.
Yeah. And and Rumor Willis. And so we did all these shows and we did like B. Slade, who is this guy who had done a bunch of stuff with For the Record. And we did Ethiokali, which is this Ethiopian jazz band that was in California. And we did like Syncopated Ladies, which are like these great, tap group out of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And so we knew that we needed to have this diverse and inclusive thing. Also, we needed to like sell the room and make it a thing. And so we engaged with all the designers there and all the sort of like all the people who were the lighting people and the sound people who we had on staff. And we were like, you're going to build the room with us. Like, we're going to utilize you guys because you sit here and you program lights for someone else's plot. So like, you do your own thing. Let's all buy into this. Let's all do this together.
This sounds familiar.
Interesting. So we did this. And then I went on a work trip to the UK and I like fell in love with it. And I was going to either leave to go back to New York or I was going to go somewhere else. And I found out how to get a visa. And I got I've been on a visa here for about 3 years. I mean, I got that visa quite literally off the backs of the artistic director taking a flyer on me and like letting me sort of like do it. Because it was all the stuff around the sorting room and Spring Awakening and those things that were like the whole reason I'm here. And if it wasn't for that sort of like sending the elevator back down bit, I think I wouldn't be where I'm at. And so I moved over. I was at Donmore Warehouse in fundraising for a year. Then went to English National Ballet, worked on a big commercial thing with them. The guy who was is the executive director there was sort of started all the commercial stuff at the National. So started the bookstore and started like the understudy bar, all the bars on the South Bank, how they sort of do that sort of stuff. And the team I was working with there, we were just trying to do sort of a bit of the same within EMB because those revenue streams can be really, really beneficial to creating new work. Mm-hmm. And then I did like everyone else, took like a 12-month break.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Became really entrepreneurial. Just thinking about, I'll open up a detergent company. I didn't, that's not a real thing. And so I went and I I had to sort of change gears, and I worked for an education nonprofit for a year. And I was working on that while freelancing. But what I got from that was this completely different way of running a company, because it's an education nonprofit. It's got a very high turnover. It's got a lot of staff. It's the most expensive way to train a teacher, but it's the best way to train a teacher. I emailed the CEO on my last day and just like, thanks so much for everything. That was really great. It was lovely. And he emailed back right off the back of it. Thank you so much for that. That's great. He would talk about like finding your why and why we do what we do. Yeah. And I've never felt, I think Paul Cruz at the Wallace is probably one of the other arts leaders. And now, honestly, like, and I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid, but honestly, like David Byrne at New Diorama is very much where he talks and you believe everything he's saying. Mm-hmm. It's not like I watched a Brené Brown TED talk and now I can tell you exactly how to dare greatly. It's like, it's a real sort of, I think, like you just believe it, like you really believe it. So Teach First sort of like drummed up this whole, like, you know what you're doing in a climate in which we have been like imposter syndrome is through the roof mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. And I think especially in the arts, it's really bad. We don't know, like there is no litmus test right now, I think. And I think we're coming out of this sort of like building back better is sort of like the sort of thing I would go back to. And then it comes full circle to this NDT Broadgate thing. I saw the senior project manager role open up at Broadgate and I applied and I went and I interviewed. And I remember going in being like, I don't know what I want to do. I want to do this. Is it really right for me? Should I be producing? Should I stick to that sort of thing? And I went in the room and I met them, and it was David and the exec director and the artistic director of Chinese Arts Now, and Shanko, who's the design associate on the project. And I like left, and I, after the interview, and I was like, I have to get that job. Like, I want that. Like you feel that thing in a room where you're like, that's what I want. That's it. That's the thing. And now here we are.
That's crazy. That also, the way that you just described your experience at the education nonprofit, I have to send this to you, Joe, because I was reading, did you read the article this morning from American Theater Group on Serembe? I don't never know how to know it, say the name of that theater.
No, I didn't.
You know, the crazy fucking theater in Georgia that was doing like the Titanic ship and all that shit.
Yeah.
There's an article that I saw this morning about all of the sort of like waterfall of working conditions being reported there. Mm. And when you were talking, it reminded me that like truly, and I think this is true of startups too, because I was just thinking about this and like the WeWork cult, you know, side of startups and theaters, that you don't get what you're talking about very often, which is like a true leader, a person with their own vision, informed by a deep understanding of the history and the future of where everything is headed. Like it is very like you said, I watched all of Simon Sinek's like,
oh, yeah,
What's My Why and Brené Brown and read the Purple Rhinoceros book, and now I'm gonna spit it all back out at you like I'm a fucking genius.
Yeah, but that's it's I don't know what it is, but it's like putting your money where your mouth is. I mean, it really is. And it's like mm-hmm. you can spout that stuff all day long, but you have to like you gotta believe it. And I think that comes from all sorts of places. And I think that's one of the big things about Broadgate, is not only is it sort of this resource for independent artists and independent companies, but it's also like there's this right, we're building this space, and then there's this culture thing we're going to work on too. Mm-hmm. And there's this talking about freelance designers and how they interact with up and down sort of the chain of command at a theater and those sorts of things. And that's a massive chunk of it. I was having a conversation today and I was talking about the gaslighting that goes on in theater, and this sort of like the sort of recurring imposter syndrome that happens with people, and people don't think they're good enough, and people, you know, you're trained to say it's fine, let's just get through this project. And it's a massive thing that Broadgate wants to do to change that, to like stop that from happening. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, they, you know, change seldom comes from the front. It tends to always come from the middle of the pack. There's a thing where you don't think as a freelancer that you have the power to do it. You don't think as an independent company, you've got the power to do it. We've got, I think, about 37 companies in this first run, in this first sort of go. Then we're opening another thing in which the next sort of application process does mid-September through December 2020, December 22nd. So that will be another group. You know, we've booked 1,100 hours of free space already. And it's ridiculous. It's 200. The value is about £200 per day, per space, per company, basically. So it's like, that's the like dollar amount that is being given back. And it's not just that, like we're talking about things as far as like leveling the playing field as a whole. I'm going off on a tangent.
That's what podcasts are for.
I know. But yeah, that's why I sort of really wanted to get into it, was also this idea of like, those HR practices are not difficult. If you put your ego aside and you realize that it's a job, and like, we know we're going to get feedback about Broadgate that's going to annoy us. I know it is. I'm going to feel personal about it, but like, it's going to be about wanting more resource, and that's fine. Like, tell us that, because we're literally never going to make it better if we just sit here and it's like, I don't want to hear it. Let's just let them go to the next thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, you have to, like, what resource do you need? What do you want next? Like, let's do that. So yeah, there you go. That's my TED Talk.
I love this TED Talk. And hello, everyone. So good to be in here talking with y'all. With Justin, I was thinking, like, my perspective on sort of a lot of what Justin and I talk about across this podcast is coming from a sort of startup tech world. And so as you were talking through your history, I was like, cool, don't know that name. Cool, don't know that name. And there's like Brené Brown. I was like, got one. I got one. But actually, I love it. It puts me in this kind of empowered position to be like almost like a freshman in college. Yeah. And you're like, hi. So I like actually have no idea what I'm talking about. And it's not an imposter syndrome thing. It's like, I just genuinely don't know. Mm-mm. And so if I was, you know, somehow one of these 37 companies or wanting to understand better what one of these 37 companies is doing with y'all, like how does that actually work? How do I get into this mix?
So we have basically actively removed biases from the application process. It's completely straightforward. It is not merit-based, and it is a lottery. So there is no, you do not have to spill about your life story or any of that. There are requirements like living wage has to be met. So, you know, we have to talk about that. If that's not happening within a company, you can't be a national portfolio organization. So you can't have a massive amount of funding behind you. Mm-hmm. And then behind the scenes, there's an equity that we've put back into it twofold, basically. So you go in and you go to this form and you apply and you put in the name of the company, how long you want it, what size space you want, the living wage questions. There's a few other questions in there about access, and that basically determines if we can. It doesn't mean you will get rejected. It makes us choose a different floor, because there are we've got only accessible toilets on one floor. But like, we actively take that into consideration, and then we have ring fenced for working class artists. We've ring fenced for Black and Asian and minority ethnic and the global majority.
Yeah.
And then we've also ring fenced for deaf and disabled.
What do you call that? Ring fence?
Yeah, I was just going to ask the same.
Ring fencing. So we protect them, basically. So we like, we hold space. There is space at Broadgate that is only for those people. And we do that on purpose, because it's an equitable thing of sort of like, it can't be equal, because that doesn't work.
Right. Yeah. So it's about equity.
Where we sort of raise it up. Right. Uh-huh. Exactly.
Oh, I love this term. Yeah. I don't think we have or use that term over on this continent.
It's a brand new one. Also, someone said global majority the other day at Broadgate, and I was like, that's a better way to say it.
Mm-hmm. We've undergone the same transformation a few weeks ago.
Yeah, Jermaine was like, oh no, I use global majority now. We were like, oh yeah, duh. Love that.
Duh, exactly.
Just shifting that window.
The other bit of it is we have space set aside to make sure that those groups are getting space who have not been given space historically. And not only that, But those groups, we found that they were, that there was asks for more sort of dance studios or PA systems. And we realized that we would be doing a disservice to have to say we can give you space, but you've got to do it this way. Mm-hmm. So we outfitted those studios to the highest level so that we don't ever have to say no to them. And I heard that on like day one, David told me that, the artistic director. And I just went, yeah, okay.
This makes, oh my God. So for, I'm like tight, like Lucy, can you book us tickets to London? Cause we're just going to go ahead and move. Cause this is amazing.
Yeah.
But it makes me, you having explained that makes so much clearer something that you and I were, I think we were talking via messaging about where we've had this conversation a couple of times on Clubhouse about like how the arts are so good for economic development, right? Neighborhoods revitalize, stores, restaurants, and then you use the artists up and you kick them out. And now, like listening to what you were saying, you were like, this is a partnership. This is a thing that can be replicated, that can happen and is good for everyone. And now I've just like, I don't know, something clicked in listening to the description of all of this. Like, of course, you have this like for-profit, nonprofit partnership in that the for-profit is just all the people who are going to benefit off of this. But this way you can't use everybody up.
Right.
Because you're endowed, right? With this building that was given by the government and the system and the systems you guys are building that will support this running effectively and efficiently long term.
Yeah. It's there's so many bits about this in which I'm like, there is no excuse as to why this shouldn't be happening in cities, other cities around the world. Like there's none. Like this is happening. How many articles have we read in New York Times or New Yorker or The Atlantic about these sort of like, you've got tower blocks with nobody in them.
Right.
You've got spaces in Manhattan. You've got spaces in Los Angeles where it's like, we transformed an office block. And you know what? Some of the rooms have pillars in them, but like people don't care.
No.
Like, well, I mean, I would, but it's, you know, no, just kidding.
I'd rather that room exist and have a pillar in it than not exist at all.
That's what I'm saying.
My dance studio growing up had two giant pillars in the middle of it. You just dance around it. It's fine.
Well, that sounds especially dangerous. Oh, maybe good training, though.
It's good. It's great training. You learn to spot. You move around it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. But no, but there's so much thought that's going into so many different things, I think. And you know, and to continue on to basically with the application process is that, you know, then the lottery happens. People are told that they've been allocated space or they haven't been allocated space. And we don't say sort of no, and that's it. We say no, and here are other options. And here's what you could do. And there are options that partners like Theatre Deli have in which they have some of the most affordable space in London. So we do the sort of lottery pull and then that was a big thing was we wanted the merit. There's a really great sort of like question that was answered around, you know, the theater industry has been judging on quality for as long as we can remember, right? Quality in quotes, right? And this whole idea of like trying things differently, like it's time we don't do it. It's time we just, you can make whatever you want to make. And that's the thing. We don't do whatever you want to do. That's it. It's Carnegie Mellon used to do this. Well, they still do it, called Playground, where they shut the school down for a week and you got to send in projects and you got to make whatever you wanted for a week. And you would have Pigpen Theater Company I was on the committee.
God, I fucking love them.
I was on the Playground committee that approved the first Pigpen Theater thing at Carnegie Mellon. And I've stayed friends with those guys ever since. And they went to the Wallace, I think 2 years after I left, but like, that was a whole, like, you would have, they came out of that process. They came out of that sort of like having space for free to make what you want to make. And you just get to do what you want to do. And I think it's this freedom that we all like had in college that like faded away because we have bills to pay. Mm-hmm. So we're going, well, then here's your free space and spend that money on diversity and inclusion within your companies or paying better wages or whatever you want to do. But here you go. Yeah.
Yeah. I love the, like the Occam's razor kind of approach to solving the problem of like, oh, we want people and we want anyone and everyone to be able to create amazing things and to become the next Pigpen Theater Company. But like the simplest solution is just give space. You know, you can create all these complex hierarchical things to try and meritocracies and doling out of grants based on very highly convoluted application processes. And it's like, what if we just simplified that and just gave anyone and everyone space?
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, what a brilliant concept.
Yeah. And I think the simplicity also comes with the fact that like, you're like, oh, but how are you going to do it for cheap? And it's like, have you met a set designer?
Yeah.
Like, but like their job is, yeah, they know how to do it expensive, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's plenty of them.
Yeah.
But it's like, but they also know how to do it for cheap.
Totally. And make it look like it's $1 million.
So that's what we did, was we worked with two, it was designed by two designers, two theater designers, to do the space. And so they designed it all, they put it all together. And there's, you know, they have sort of like, there's tricks and ways in which, you know, designers have to do things to figure out how to, you know, fit a square hole in a round. A square hole in a
peg?
Yep. Wait. Square. That's square, whatever. It's fine.
Yep.
Square peg. Got it. Yeah. Yeah. We got it. We got there. but I think that's, it's such a no brainer. It's what we did at the Sorting Room, was we said, we've got no money. What do you want to do? We can give you, what do you want the money for? And everyone's like, lights and a neon sign. And you're like, great. And then the rest of that whole wall in the Sorting Room is shipping pallets that we got like stuff on. But we knew that Joe's Pub has the acoustic wall behind it, right? Mm-hmm. So you know, when you see like the spikes, that you know, mm-hmm, it's Joe's Pub. And the same, we knew the Sorting Room needed the same. So we hung up a bunch of shipping pallets.
Oh, that's brilliant. So chic. You were way ahead of the sort of urban chic.
I was way ahead of it.
I love like something you said before, sort of the no but. It feels like the sort of undervalued like cousin to the yes and. It's like, no, we don't have an infinite budget, but we can do this. Or it's like, no, like this doesn't technically work here, but I can make this happen over there or introduce you to this other company that can help you. Like, I like this no but.
Yeah.
Because like sometimes you have to say no, right? Just resourcing restrictions or whatever it might be. But we're not going to just leave you hanging. We're going to do something. We're going to make some change. We're going to innovate. We're going to be creative. We're going to make it happen.
Yeah. We did a thing today where we have some PA systems in some of the rooms and then we don't in others. We realized that the way in which we're going to talk to the artists that are coming in on Monday is we're going to tell them what we have and what we don't have. Because if we tell them what we have and what we don't have, they can prep for coming in on Monday. But then it's like, this isn't like, we're not trying to trick you. Like, we're giving you the space, but like, it's not done.
Yeah.
So you've got to do this bit, but we're giving it to you. So do what you want to do. But just so you know, like, we don't have a copy machine. So you've got to print your scripts before you come to us. And today we just went, you know, let's get some Bluetooth speakers. Someone's going to ask for one. We'll just have them just in case we have them. So we go, we don't have a PA system, but we'll give you a Bluetooth speaker and it's a good one. So, you know, take care of it, but we'll give you a Bluetooth speaker for your space. So there's these little things where you're like £60 for a Bluetooth speaker. It changes the game of the room and it changes how things feel. So it's like, you're right. It's like the no but bit is working really well. Cause you just go, you know, no, we don't have that, but we will have coffee, or we won't have that, but we'll have this. And I think that those things really work, because I think artists and companies aren't used to having as frank of a conversation as that.
No.
And I think that we're not the Wallace, we're not the public. So we're not, you know, we're not meeting sort of, you know, we're not meeting equity, those equity requirements. We're not doing those things because that's not the point of the space. And we're not a theater. So it's, you know, there are going to be things in which it's going to feel a little bit rugged and it's going to feel a little bit bespoke. But I think the life that comes out of that within the space, I think is so much better than it being polished. Like, it looks like a work in progress. It's great. And the space looks incredible. I mean, the fact that they fit out a brand new space, well, the space in 6 weeks.
Crazy. A whole block, you said? A whole city block?
It's two stories. So it's two floors, 20,000 square feet. Yeah.
6 weeks?
It's ridiculous.
Wow. I love it. Took us like 6 weeks just to schedule this podcast, and they built out an entire.
I thought you were going to say to build out our little tiny office.
Well, that too.
That was my fault. Okay. I had a moment of fear because I was like, it's going to be day two. I should maybe wait till day 10, if that's all right. You know, I think there's this other bit of it that I really love that, you know, there's always this sort of thing of if you ask someone why they like the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, a lot of it has to do with the fact that shows are created after you've seen a show at the pub with a bunch of friends. Mm-hmm. And I think that that bit of it is something we want to make sure that we're creating as well, because we want all of these companies to talk to one another. The thing is, I saw the first list of who has gotten into the space, mm-hmm. and the amount of people whose companies are led by deaf and disabled, I had no clue. None. Because you don't sometimes. And, you know, and this is the whole part of like, how are we learning to talk better about things? How are we learning to we need to like know about these companies. And I'm sitting there looking at this list and being like, how did I not know about all these companies? Like, they're doing unbelievable work.
Oh my God.
And it's like, I love that about it, because you're putting these companies together and who would probably never be in the same space. But like, if you get like, you know, migrants in theater working with Chinese Arts Now and putting something together, mm-hmm. It's brilliant. It's great stuff, because those companies might have never talked to one another. Now, those are two associate companies of New Diorama Theater. But still, I think that that's a huge chunk of it, of creating this environment in which people are going out to drinks after they've left NDT Broadgate with companies that they've never met before, and they're making a new show, or they're making a new thing, or they're, you know, doing X, Y, and Z.
It's something you were saying back a second ago with space and like qualifying it, you know, around just space and do whatever you want, makes me think of like these conversations we've been having here. And we ended Clubhouse today on sort of like the idea that you just like can't in the United States untangle capitalism with theater, even though we pretend like we can. And so I started thinking about that, and thinking about how like Joe and I, as we're out like, you know, fucking shilling to raise money for this technology company, like that's the conversation we frequently have, is like, oh, we built space for people on a suite of technology that exists right now that limits, you are limited by us and your money, right? Because it's just like inherently expensive.
Yeah.
And people don't know how to make the online version of what you're doing yet. So you're also limited by our brains. They're wildly creative, but like, you're limited by us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so like what we so frequently talk about is the power to build something that like lets the masses loose, because you can't even imagine what will be created. And that, I don't know, I find it fascinating and so cool that that's sort of like, there's a direct connection like with what you all are doing. And that's exactly what comes out of it, is you can't imagine what will be created, and which inherently disentangles you from being a curator of it, right? Which is how we end up with bias in art and like all of that stuff.
Yeah, I think that there's a, you know, I think the one thing we will probably ask of all companies is simply an acknowledgement that it was developed at NDT Broadgate.
Love that.
And that will be it.
Yeah.
That's it. I don't think we will be asking for any more than that. I think that will be it. And the only reason is to sort of make it spread, because the more we can talk about hours and how many things have been done for these companies, and how, you know, like 3 weeks of free space has like propelled something into being able to do their next step and to get into a theater, I think that's where we go, right, we've got the blueprint. So why don't let's put it somewhere else now. Let's go somewhere else. Let's go to somewhere else that you know, the landlords own. You know, that's a big chunk of it. Of yes, it's a massive capitalism thing meeting sort of like nonprofit here, because British Land are massive landowners in Great Britain, and they have just been so helpful and wanting to do this and excited about this. And it's you're not primed to think that those people people who are massive, like sort of landowners in that way would want to get on board with something like this because it doesn't generate them money. But what it does do is it puts people into the coffee shops and the cafes downstairs. And like, they've got a cinema that's right outside and they've got like, they've got a whole sort of like ring of like bars and restaurants. That's like a stone's throw away from NDT Broadgate. So for them, they go, right, so you've got 37 companies that weren't there now that are there that are regenerating foot traffic into our spaces. So the marriage, I think, works, but it's got to be so specific. And they've been amazing. Like, they've been like, they're like helping us out left and right. Like, they've been like just unbelievable partners in this. And you know, there's many more partners that are involved, like Gerwood Arts and you know, and those folks, but they, that is the, I think that sort of like the real big crossroads of like sort of this capitalist building sort of thing and then nonprofit. And I think it's been really incredible because I think you don't really see that ever. I've noticed more, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like I've noticed more of it happening here in the UK of big property development people aligning with nonprofits. I don't know if I'm actually not quite sure if it happens as much in the States. It probably doesn't.
Maybe it does, but not that I guess I'll speak for Jess as she shakes her head.
No.
I'm aware of. I've been like noodling on like, what's the right question direction to talk about like the cultural difference between? Yeah, like why does British Land care so much about this versus like the sort of performative philanthropy that I think kind of defines like these American philanthropists.
People
who do own the money, the power, the access that are they're not taking these actions.
I think it's like if you look up sort of the headlines from British Land for the past year, there's a lot of stuff out there, and like I'm not the expert on this by any means, but like they lost £1.2 billion off their portfolio. And don't quote me on it, but they lost a lot of foot traffic, and you see it at Broadgate. It's not as bustling as it used to be, and the spaces we're in used to be offices, you know. And David reached out and started the conversation with them, and they just got on board. And I think it's like the press around it for somewhere in New York doing that would be enormous.
Crazy.
It would be crazy. And it's like, you know, you're going to generate all this traffic downstairs in any building in New York City, and they're going to own the businesses downstairs too. So it's like Rockefeller Center, I'm looking at you. What? But I think
literally any and all of these New York City neighborhoods that are just still shut down to this date, like, you know, there's various restaurants and quick serve restaurants and things like that that are just still not open because people haven't come back in the same amount to the office buildings and things like that.
Yeah.
So why not have temporary leasing for people to come in and create things?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's going to be, I'm really excited about the data we're going to collect around it, because I think that gives strength to people who want to do it somewhere else. And it gives, I mean, the supporters of this project get all that credit. You know, they are the ones that have been there helping, you know, to turn this into what it is, really. So I just feel like someone I'll help, but I just feel like someone in New York's got to just start the conversation and ask. I think you would, if you had something that was like 42nd Street Studios that was free, it would be unreal. It would be the press around that and the goodwill and all of that. I mean, it would be insane.
I stick with me because this is a real weird intersection of some ideas, but I was noodling on this, to borrow Joe's word, this weekend for us, and I actually think it applies to Broadgate and this project in New York that is going to come to fruition. I was watching Amazon's Making the Cut with Heidi Klum and Tim Gunn, which is, you know, in the fashion industry. And this had come up last season too, because they've done two seasons as well. They talk quite a bit, and the designers talk quite a bit about pop-up stores. And this year they were referring to them as concept stores, and how these are ways to invite someone in to feel, touch, really experience your brand and get to know you through your brand. Which, like, I'm just pretty obsessed with, because I don't think there's not clear, there's pieces and parts of that inside our industry. But this is something, that's why we started building tech. It's just very hard to get to know theater, right? Like, it's expensive, it's geolocation, all of the things. So this weekend they were talking about concept stores, and when I was finishing the season, and I was like, ah, fuck, there's something about space that's ephemeral and cost effective that, like, for us, like, thinking about the idea of making, digital engagements around your in-person theater, your version of your concept store, that you invite your universe that's kind of affordable to build and invite people in for a night. And I feel like that potential is there with Broadgate too, right? As an artist, like, clearly, what I'd do if I walked in there, like, the ability to create an experience and interaction with, let's just say Pigpen, which I know is the United States company, but just because it's on my brain, like, to get to know Pigpen, which, so that there's the band and the theater experience and this whole thing, because you have this space and you have these designers and you have sort of this short engagement that you have. I don't know. I just think there's some really cool fucking shit to be dreamed up here.
Well, you might have leaked something by having idea. No, it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. But
Broadway Locked exclusive.
I'm sorry, what? But that thought is absolutely on the table. That is,
oh, that's so cool.
Absolutely talking about how do we do that sort of stuff as well? Because I think that's you are bang on right with that about how good would that be if you had kids who were going to school in City of London that went and met and saw how Chinese Arts Now do a show. Like,
oh my God.
Ridiculous. Or you have kids who go to they go to design school, and they come and they go into the design maker space and they see all these associate artists doing all this design work, and they get to talk to these people. And you've got, who knows who's going to be in there, but you're absolutely right. That's the sort of next sort of step of it, of those sorts of things. And the other bit of it is, if that becomes an event and you charge for it, and then that money goes back into doing another year, then it's people would absolutely pay £10, £15 to sit in a masterclass some of these people. That's absolutely something that I think is a no-brainer in doing with the space, and doing with, the copy and pasting of the space too. Cause I think it's just, it's crazy, because so the big partnerships for this are British Land, City of London, Arts Council England, Jerwood Arts and Theatre Delhi. So we've basically got these sort of five companies, five places that are really, really big partnerships on this. And then of course there's other partnerships that sort of New Diorama has as well. New Diorama, and they wouldn't bat an eye at this, they're not the biggest theater in London. So there are places that have more money. And I just think that there's a getting behind something that I think we're seeing in New Diorama having activated these networks and doing it, that I think is within reach of a lot of places, especially in the United States. And there's a lot of people, I think, like-minded like us, that very much are okay, let's find the money. Let's do it then. Come on.
Totally.
Philanthropy in the UK is much harder than the US. There's not as much. And capitalism is rampant in the United States, as we know. And I think that's something where I think that there are a lot of people who would who would absolutely get behind these ideas and be a part of this. And I think that's what's exciting, is because we're going to do this. We're going to put the data out, and then we're going to go, so who wants to do it next? And I think that's that's the cool bit of it. That's the exciting stuff.
And here's the thing, right? I was reviewing all the news articles that are out. I know you're right. This is philanthropy in some way, right? This is UK stuff. We can't do it in America. So much capitalism. But every fucking one of those articles that's out positions this as a post-pandemic recovery, right. Which right. is economic, right? It's not we're the thing that would give everybody's light everyone's panties on fire in America, which is like, we're giving handouts to artists. Oh God, no, stop it. Right? Like,
yeah,
this is pandemic recovery.
All right, but at the same time,
even though we all know it's really the future of the theater.
But at the same time, you know? I also think that, like, who cares if we're handing out handouts to artists right now?
Like, no, for sure. I agree.
You know what I mean?
American taxpayers do. It's really annoying. That's, I think, one of, like, the big cultural differences is that, like, there is an expectation of getting something from your government, I think, in the UK and, like, Europe more generally. That is a big difference that to, like, what American culture is, which is, like, get the government out of my pocket. And I actually just want it to spend less money everywhere and not an expectation that it should be doing good, amazing, cool things. And I should ask that of it and demand that of it and expect that of it.
I think you're right. I think that that's a massive difference that I've seen for sure. And it's just, you know, the National Endowment for the Arts, like, I hate how underfunded it is. Like, it's such a what? Like, it doesn't make any sense, you know? And it's the fact that there isn't really a national theater of the United States. Like, I just am like, but, like, why isn't that the Kennedy Center? Or why isn't that Lincoln Center? Or why isn't that, there's so many, I mean, listen, that's opening a whole new can of podcasts right there.
Welcome to our series.
I'm sorry, hello? I think this is something that it's all about building back better than we did before. And I think we're seeing a lot of things that have come out of it. Like, you guys weren't doing this a year ago, right? Were you? Oh God. But like
a version, but not a version. Not exactly.
But like, I wasn't doing this a year ago. I was absolutely not in this headspace a year ago. And I think it's, totally. I think it's just, we like, oh, there's so many people that want to get on board with this train, I think, and wanted to do this and want to build back better and want to do these things. And like, I remember, do you remember when Jermaine was talking about how he like, had he had something like this, he would have done so much more. And it's that's what we're talking about. Like,
and that's not lip service. About. Like, no. As someone who has known Jermaine since he was 16 years old, I could cry thinking of the things he hasn't made. You know what I mean? Because he didn't have that space.
But like, all of us are in that boat, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But all of us are in that boat of like, there is stuff we haven't done because we haven't felt supported enough, or we haven't had the space, or we haven't. And like, I think all of us will agree that like, this is a quite privileged four that are sitting, that are here. And it's like, if we feel that, then like, what are we doing? What are we doing? Because it's
not doing it right.
Well, exactly. What are you doing? You are giving people space, Justin. That's what you're doing.
I did it.
We're killing it. But
I just wish you could have seen him with his Stevia arms.
So, so good. This has been so much fun.
I don't understand how we're done.
Yeah,
I know either,
but Justin Masterson of the New Diorama Theater. Where can people find you? Where can people learn more about the New Diorama Theater and plug all the things?
So they can go to newdiorama.com, and on newdiorama.com, they'll find sort of like what's on at the theater, but then they'll also, there's a tab for NDT Broadgate. There's email addresses there. Broadgate@newdiorama.com is sort of the place to get a hold of us. And I think those, I watch that inbox, so you can say you heard it here, and then they'll be like, Justin, what the H is this? So
you can get the direct line to Justin.
Exactly. Broadgate@newdiorama.com if you have any questions, or if you want to ask us more, or if you have ideas. That's the other thing, is like, we can't do this all on our own, and we can't make the best stuff on our own. So like, if you know of good stuff, if you know of designers who want to do stuff, or if you know people who want to donate chairs or maybe some nice, like a couch or like any of those things, let us know.
Speakers.
But yeah, exactly. But yeah, you can see all the stuff there, the application process. So it's all there. If you're in London, apply. But there you go. That's all the stuff.
Holy shit. This is amazing. Thank you so much for joining us. It's so exciting to meet you in person.
You too, but on a screen.
On a screen, in person, on step by step, baby steps.
So many layers of meeting people.
So many layers.
Great to e-meet you.
Great to meet you all as well.
I hate it. Disgusting.
Don't talk about it like that.
I'm so excited. We just finished our first episode with our first guest on this podcast, and it did not disappoint. We've been waiting to talk to Justin for so long, and that was so exciting.
Justin he's so brilliant and well-spoken, and there was something about when he was introducing himself that I was like, oh, he's just like media trained for himself. Like, he perfectly encapsulated how his history rolls up into what he is doing now. And I can't think of a better person to be running that space.
He inspired me too, right? Like, his story and how he sort of like ended up where he needed to be doing what like really inspired him, and that New Diorama wasn't even on his radar a year ago, and here he is in this perfect place after hearing all of that story about the Wallace and his space that he created inside the walls. I don't know, it just felt like just a nice reminder that things can fall in place in the way that you want them to.
Yeah, I like he pushed for it. He like kind of chased it a bit.
Yeah, and that you like, work for. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I went into that room and I was like, I need this job.
And I did that job. So good. It's such a theater story. That's literally what happens every time you really make your mind up when you walk into an audition room or a job interview.
Yeah, what a perfect guest. And I'm so happy he was our first.
Me too.
And hey, everyone, we would love to know what you thought about the episode. This is our first interview episode, and we thought it was pretty awesome. So tell us, keep this conversation going around and around, because we want to know what you think. Join us on Twitter, tweet at us at BWI Unlocked, and use the hashtag TechTheaterCH to share those thoughts.
We'll even pull Justin into that conversation, because I don't know about you, but I'm clearly not done talking about this. And so if you want to also hear me no doubt ramble about this as well next Tuesday on Clubhouse, we'll be there, 12:55 Eastern. Raise your hand, jump in, and share your thoughts.
Yeah, and if you'd like to join the Broadway Unlocked family on Clubhouse, you can host a show. Pitch us your idea, broadwayunlocked.com/CH, and you can talk to the nice robo, Jess, about what you want to talk about.
Every single topic we've talked about on Clubhouse and here on this podcast is inspired by the articles we read each week and the people on our stage, just like our friend Justin Masterson. So please tweet us at hashtag TechTheaterCH and join in the conversation. And until then, we'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.